the TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to TNT, today's News Talk. The Patrick Henningsen Show is underway. We're in the first hour, and we're going to be joined in a few minutes by Christian, a research assistant for the show, and we got a couple of amazing guests after that. We're going to be joined by Freddie Ponton with a story hot off the press about the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipeline sabotage, and in the third hour, best-selling author F. William Engdahl to expand further on the Nord Stream issue and looking at the energy disaster that's about to grip Europe coming into the winter. There's so much to unpack, and we're going to do it all in this episode of the show today here on Tuesday. Wherever you are in the world, thank you so much for joining us for this live broadcast globally. Now, in terms of the headlines, let's take a look at what's going on. Look, there's just too many stories right now about energy saving schemes, about regulating energy this winter. So you can see where this is all going. And meanwhile, the Ukrainian proxy war is barreling forward. Zelensky's banging his pots and pans together. We just gave him $12 million. Proxy war is barreling forward. Zelensky's banging his pots and pans together. We just gave him $12 million over the weekend from the U.S. He wants another 10 or 20 billion by Friday, no doubt. So this is just turning into a black sinkhole of cash and money. But truth be known, and this is a shocking statistic for a lot of people, truth be known, the amount of so-called military aid and assistance that has been falling into the coffers of the Kiev regime will very soon be in excess of the entire annual Russian military budget. That's the whole nuclear arsenal and all of the bases and all of the sort of far-flung stations that Russia has to maintain over this massive Eurasian landmass. What we've dumped into Ukraine is in excess of that. So people say the village of Lyman, apparently Ukraine, according to the Washington Post, is about to take the village of Lyman, retake it. So this is their big victory. This is the turning point. The walls are closing in on Putin. Well, they've been saying this for about 8 months now. And so if that's the case, so we've just handed over the equivalent of Russia's annual military budget. That's in Syria and all their sort of activities. That's all the ships, the subs, the bases, the soldiers, many more soldiers than Ukraine. In fact, we've given more than that amount to Ukraine, and Ukraine has a depressed economy, more depressed and a higher devalued currency than Russia does. We've given that much money to Zelensky and his merry band of nationalists, ultra nationalists, and they haven't. They just lost a third of the country. I'm confused reading this because I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. He's just lost a third of the country. The referendums have now been ratified by the parliament in Moscow, by the Duma. It's gone through the lower and upper chambers. So that's a done deal as far as Russia's concerned. That's an addition of four regions to the Russian Federation. I mean, folks, this is just this is what it is. It's on paper, and it's not going back. I'm sorry, you know. So the West is not going to recognize these. They vowed to never recognize these territories and these sham referendums, say U.S. officials. Well, unfortunately for the U.S., for Britain, and the rest of the clamoring First World, the rules-based international order gang, sorry to tell you, but all those people living in that region, I mean, look at these results, 98% in favor of joining Russia, 94% in favor of joining the Russian Federation, 99% in favor of joining the Russian Federation, that's Donetsk People's Republic. Sorry, folks. But the people who live in those regions, Yeah, they did go out and vote. And yes, those are the results. And it doesn't take a genius. When you look at this, the basket case of this country known as Ukraine, run by a depraved vaudeville comedian who was a TV star and all of a sudden was thrust into politics. And all of a sudden you've got, you know, bands of neo-Nazi battalions basically running military affairs and intimidating Russian-speaking citizens, shelling their own people in Donetsk and Lugansk. And they want to vote to leave Ukraine? I mean, go figure. Go figure. We're not rocket scientists here. We're just people observing human events. Let's take a break here with TNT, and we will connect Christian on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. Stick around. We'll be right back.
You should hear what Hrvoje Morić is talking about.
The situation in Iran, which seems to be yet another color revolution. They've shut the internet. The usual suspects have their fingerprints all over the place. You know, National Endowment for Democracy and many of these other NGOs. And it's been reported that Secretary of State Blinken said, "We took action today to advance internet freedom and the free flow of information for the Iranian people." And Elon Musk activated his Starlink over Iran, which would allow the U.S. to bypass Iranian censorship and flood Iran with all the propaganda it wants and try to overthrow the Iranian government. So you had Kazakhstan, Pakistan, Iran now going for China and Russia. They're going for the gold. I don't know. We'll see. But, you know, crazy things are going on.
Hrvoje Morić on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
You have the right to know. The right to know about culture. The right to know about the economy. The right to know about technology and to know about sports. You have the right to know about education and politics and the weather. You have the right to know what's happening abroad and in your backyard. But above all else, you have the right to know that this right is under attack, and we must work to protect it. Because in order to be free, we must be informed. Understand the threats. ProtectPressFreedom.org.
Telling the truth is the only mandate we believe in. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT, Today's News Talk. Thank you so much for rejoining us for this live broadcast. And I'm going to try to connect Christian, our research assistant, for the show in a few minutes. But in the meantime, while we do that on the back end, thank you also to our producer for helping us on the technical side on this. We've got a few issues that we're ironing out. Nonetheless, we're going to pivot back to, I mean, this story is incredible. Elon Musk. So Musk is back in the frame. He couldn't keep himself out of geopolitical affairs. I mean, you got to admire the moxie of this guy. This is the head of SpaceX, Tesla, Starlink. How many companies does this guy run? I mean, he's pretty much at the fulcrum of all major sort of tech. He's allegedly the richest man in the world, on paper anyway. Tried to buy Twitter. That's going to end up in court, probably. Didn't like the price. Couldn't get out of the deal because he was too deep in. So he basically said, "You're lying about the amount of bots you've got on the platform." Anyway, so Musk is, get a load of this. Elon Musk has proposed a peace deal. And from a PR point of view, this is absolutely a blinder. And what Elon Musk is doing here, and this is interesting, he's kind of positioning himself this in the same way. If you followed the last election, you know, Andrew Yang sort of came to the fore, I think, in 2020 as this kind of progressive technocratic candidate. You see, technocrat Andrew Yang. And so you want Yang Bucks, universal basic income. So Yang was in there as a Democrat. Says he was a libertarian of sorts, basically pushing out all of these sort of futurist technocracy ideas and policies, like UBI, for instance, and very popular. Of course, this helped to split the Bernie crowd. I think that was the intention early on, was that he would pull some of the Democratic Socialists away from Bernie. by dazzling them with the idea of getting paid to sit home and do nothing. Well, they ended up getting their wish anyway, didn't they, with COVID? So they got their UBI in the end, although it took the mythical spike protein to achieve that. Nonetheless, those ideas are very popular. Elon Musk has positioned himself in, he's parked in that same parking space that was occupied by Andrew Yang. So Musk is inserting himself into major world events. Now think about this for a minute. Donald Trump should have done this months ago. So, and maybe perhaps this is what the part of the Mar-a-Lago raid or the after effects of the FBI's raid on his house in Mar-a-Lago, apparently to get classified documents. I mean, if you believe that, you know, we've got bridges to sell you, lots of bridges. So that's really tied up Trump. So he's kind of under the cosh domestically. So he would have, you know, he should have been jetting around. You know, he's got his own plane, fly over to Russia, be seen to be talking with some delegations or something from various stakeholder countries in this conflict in Ukraine. Trump hasn't done that. So look who stepped forward. Another billionaire, although a bigger billionaire than Trump, Elon Musk. And it's funny that Elon Musk, if I remember correctly, speaking to Patrick Wood, who's probably one of the greatest living experts on the whole concept and history of the technocracy, that Elon Musk is the grandson, if I'm not mistaken, the grandson of the founder of the technocracy movement. Yes, you heard that correctly. From Canada to South Africa, back to Canada. That was the journey of the Musk family. So look how he's positioned himself. All his solutions, many of them anyway, are technology-based. So he's got the answers. He's got the tech. So this is sort of Trump 2.0 in the making, if you can sort of believe that. And so he's coming forward with this peace plan, a peace proposal. Gosh, he is absolutely, absolutely upstaged Trump on this. So Elon Musk has got his own peace plan. He's put it forward. And what he's proposing is that he wants UN-supervised referendums in the newly acquired territory. The basic idea here is that Ukraine has to be prepared to make some concessions. At the moment, it's not really a policy by Zelensky. It's just basically all or nothing. I want it all, or, you know, we're going to keep going to war. And it's easy for him to say that because he doesn't have any money or any arms. He's just basically getting them shoveled through the back door by the sort of crazed, Biden administration and the NATO allies. NATO's not really contributing a lot now, truth be known. It's all coming from the United States. Everyone else is broke. So it's not just that they're broke. They literally don't have any more weapons to give Zelensky, or at least they don't have any more of their old stock to give him. And it's not doing much for Ukraine, folks. Okay. Ukraine's boasting that they have all this manpower, but you can't just take old military equipment and then like suit up conscripts and throw them on the front line, tell them to sit in a dirt trench for a couple of weeks with a pack of cigarettes and like 10 bullets. And that's not going to win you a war. Okay. So the West is kind of, it's a bit of a joke. You know, in terms of actual assistance, it looks good on paper. Certainly the taxpayers in the West are forking out. Are they going to get a result in the end? So Musk is saying, look, we've got to rerun the elections. It's got to be UN supervised. And if the result comes in favor of secession from Ukraine and joining the Russian Federation, then you've got to respect that result, he's telling Zelensky and crew. Of course, Zelensky is kicking up a storm over this. He's all, how dare you? How dare you? Slava Ukraini. With his gravelly voice, Slava Ukraini. Which isn't his real voice, by the way. It's an affectation. He's adopted in his current role as, quote, president. His current acting job as president. That's the main part of the deal here. He's also saying, and this is the deal breaker for the Ukrainian nationalists is that they got to say goodbye to Crimea. You know, it's just like sayonara, Crimea, Crimea River. Okay, it's not coming back. So they just haven't come to accept that reality yet. And it's a bit of an impossible wish list that Zelensky's put forward. And of course, Americans don't know any different. I mean, they'll just basically agree with that, even though like Crimea is long gone, it's never coming back. That's Russia. Most Americans won't get that. They'll have no, they're clueless. They'll have no idea. And so you've reached this situation where it's a total impasse, and now sort of, you know, suitors are coming in with various plans and solutions to fix this thing. And here's Elon Musk. So basically it's being, you know, flatly rejected by Kiev. And this is an interesting Twitter exchange here between Elon Musk and Zelensky, or he's basically, Zelensky's put out a poll here. Or whoever does his Twitter account in English, it's probably Nina Jankovic is probably managing his Twitter account. I'm serious. So Zelensky, and a full credit to Zelensky, I'll give him credit for this. On his Twitter account, he has got his profile picture is him wearing a suit with an actual dress shirt and a tie, not the sort of Gap t-shirt that he's been sporting for the last 8 months. So he does look presidential, at least in his Twitter profile. So credit where credit's due. Volodymyr, we got a big thumbs up on the fashion police approve of your Twitter. It's very presidential, your Twitter profile. So he's saying, which Elon Musk do you like more? The one who supports Ukraine or the one who supports Russia? That's literally the Twitter poll on on Zelensky's Twitter profile. He's actually put out I mean, it's just stupid. But anyway, Musk replies, you are assuming that I wish to be popular. I don't care. That's a lie by Elon Musk. He does care. I do care that millions of people may die needlessly for essentially identical outcomes. Well, that's actually an interesting point. That's just applying basic logic, injecting basic logic into the equation. I mean, we could say, oh, this is a genius move by Musk, but, you know, he's not like putting forward any sort of great, profound philosophical tomes here. Okay. He's basically saying what we've been saying on this show at TNT and most other hosts and shows on this network on TNT have been saying the same exact thing. But because Musk says it, it's suddenly profound. These are the times we live in, sadly, folks. Anyway, I digress. And he goes on, Musk continues in this exchange with President Zelensky. He says, Russia is doing partial mobilization. They go to full war mobilization if Crimea is at risk. And by the way, Elon, that extends to if Donetsk and Lugansk are at risk, if Kherson is at risk, and now if Zaporizhia is at risk. Musk continues, death on both sides will be devastating. That's debatable. Definitely on the Ukrainian military side. So omitting the context here, Musk is not saying that Russia has been very judicious and excruciatingly idiosyncratic in avoiding civilian casualties and targets since the beginning of this conflict. Only military targets. That's why it's taking so long. That's why progress is so slow. And the West will interpret this as Putin is just not making the progress that he hoped. He was going to overrun the country in 2 weeks. And he's been pushed back but he's been surprised by the brave Ukrainian resistance. It's really surprised Vladimir Putin. He wasn't able to do what he wanted to do. That's the talking point that you see repeated all every Western mainstream media outlet. Musk continues with his common sense tirade. Russia has greater than 3 times the population of Ukraine, so victory for Ukraine is unlikely in total war. If you care about the people of Ukraine, seek peace. He says to little Volo, Now, credit where credit's due. I tip my hat to Elon Musk for saying the unsayable, even though it's common sense and it's obvious. He said it. At least somebody said it. Somebody in the West has said it. Somebody with a profile, someone with a bit of weight has actually said this. And we applaud you, Elon. We applaud you, even though we don't like the fact that you provided satellite tech to Nazis in the Azovstal plant, who were defenders of Mariupol, okay? And you tweeted at the time, there are no angels in war, in that sort of cryptic tweet that Musk put out at that time when challenged about getting involved in this military conflict. I can't help but think here that this latest move by Elon Musk, this latest explosion of Captain Obvious common sense here, and thank you, Elon, for it. Thank you from the bottom of our heart. It's good to see at least you're on that page, okay? At least you're on that page. Anyway, it's good to see that he's made this move here. I think he's compensating. I think he wants to sort of repair his reputation because he was badly implicated in that. And that was a major self-own by Elon. He's working hard here. And I think he's done a good job to sort of steal some headlines on this. And not only that, but challenge the clown in Kiev. Challenge the t-shirt man. T-shirt man not happy. Not happy with Tesla men. T-shirt man very, very unhappy. He's got a big scowl on his face. He's looking serious. I love that. I mean, Zelensky must have studied Zoolander. He must have watched the film. That's why Ben Stiller was there. Ben Stiller, you remember when the actor Ben Stiller came to Kiev for the photo op with Zelensky? And a lot of people were speculating as to why that was. My personal opinion was that Ben Stiller was working on a screenplay where he himself would play Zelensky. Of course, they're both 5'2". And both of a certain sort of, you know, actor profile, etc. I could see the attraction there. But I thought that's what that was about. So Stiller went to do some character study. Actually, that was literally Zoolander there to teach Zelensky how to do those killer looks. Do you remember that film Zoolander? And he had a couple of those killer looks where he would look at the camera. And he had names for these various looks. I don't have them to hand. Zelensky, he's got this one down cold. It's sort of the serious, pensive, sort of staring into the abyss look, where he's like pissed off, but he's brushing aside the threat. Full bore. You know, brave, slightly aloof, but yet brave under fire. Killer look, definitely a Zoolander type look there. So Zelensky is the consummate actor. He is, in fact, an actor. And so Zelensky's poll he put out on Twitter, I'd love to see the result. I've been banned from Twitter, so I can't actually log in to see the results, but I would like to see the results. Hopefully I'll get somebody to help me with that. But so this is good. And this is good. Now, I have one criticism here for Musk. It's actually a big criticism. And it's that he's inferring that the referendums are illegitimate. And so obviously that's a popular Western position. And he's trying to be politically correct there, trying in his mind to be diplomatic. But what he said there is that the people of those regions, he's disenfranchised the people of Lugansk, the people of Donetsk, the people who live in Kherson, the people who live in Zaporizhia, these former Ukrainian territories. Now, I say former Ukrainian territories because they are former. They're not coming back. He's basically disenfranchised all of the people there who have been under siege by the U.S.-backed regime in Kiev. So, you know, a little key context and a little key insight is being left out of Elon Musk's peace proposal there. And I think he's doing them a disservice they're not going to rerun the referendums with blue helmets running around, okay? Nobody in their right mind is going to do that. So they could do that. They could do that. That could be part of a deal. We'll see how big, how much weight Musk throws around, or some Democrats or Blinken or somebody in a fit of desperation might adopt this as a sort of viable plan to sort of rescue what is clearly a resounding defeat in Ukraine by the entire NATO apparatus and, of course, this puppet regime in Kiev. So, but, you know, you got to respect the will of the people. The people have spoken. There are international observers there. I know they're calling this a sham referendum. That's the talking point across the West. But the likelihood that they're going to rerun the elections with UN blue helmets and observers who might be rubbishing it or something or other, who knows, have CNN with cameras at the polls, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They've moved on. And the U.S. and everybody else that's been backing this failed project from the beginning, you got to move on, because reality is way down the road and you're still sitting there in, you know, waiting and hoping that your narrative is going to somehow come to fruition. It's not going to happen. You got to get with Team Reality on this. Let's take a break with TNT, Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen, your host. We'll be right back.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
I think it only appropriate to take a day off politics to wish Floridians, who are facing the onslaught of Hurricane Ian, all the best. I have friends in both Punta Gorda and Port Charlotte, where the eye made landfall. They took a punch to the face, but they're still standing strong. And so will the rest of Florida. But you know who's not taking a day off politics? That's right, Democrat politicians who are using Ian, which, by the way, since it's the first major storm of the season and it's late September, means that we've had an incredibly mild hurricane season. Now, they're using this storm as proof that we need to pass their climate change legislation so that storms like this can never happen again. What hubris. And if their Inflation Reduction Act couldn't even begin to address inflation, what kind of moron would think that their climate change legislation could begin to control the weather? It's not about climate change. It's a power grab. And we need to call them out on it every single time they say it. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia, in accordance with the treaty, that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty. That was President George W. Bush's announcement in December 2001 that the United States would withdraw from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty, which commenced in 1972. TNT Radio reviews this news again, more than two decades later, as a poignant reminder as to why the situation in Ukraine is so dire today. The mainstream media has failed to explain why the US withdrawal from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty has led to increased tensions between the world's nuclear superpowers and the current crisis in Ukraine. Russian President Vladimir Putin has repeatedly condemned the United States for withdrawing from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty.
Today, I have given formal notice to Russia, in accordance with the treaty, that the United States of America is withdrawing from this almost 30-year-old treaty.
Russia's concern of U.S. nuclear weapons encroaching on its borders is legitimate. How would the United States react were the tables turned and Russia had a military alliance with Mexico?
The climate change lunatics in government and at the WEF will make meat, cheese, milk, and chocolate heavily taxed luxury items to save the planet. Just like private jets, the rich will indulge in whatever they want, while the poor are left with nothing. Remind me how the French Revolution ended again, when the poor had nothing? Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Welcome back, folks. We're in hour one of the Patrick Henningsen Show. We've got Christian on the line. I love those TNT PSAs. They just kept getting more vicious, more strident, and let them eat cake. I love that last one. Remember how the French Revolution ended? Oh my goodness, they're going crazy there in the creative department at TNT. I absolutely love it. Christian, we've got you on the line. How you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you very much, man. I'm a little bit late today, but here we are.
Well, you know, everybody seems to be late. So Biden's late. He's late to inspect the Hurricane Ian. Believe it or not, President Biden actually didn't go visit Florida after the worst hurricane in 100 years. He went to Puerto Rico. So there you go. I think that had something to do with the fact that he doesn't like or is afraid of being photographed with Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor. Yet these are the crazy times we live in, these partisan times, Christian. But what are you observing right now in the world where you're at?
Well, so the one thing we're seeing every day, every minute, looking at the news in general, is that Liz Truss is getting an absolute hammering by the press, by social media, by general people who literally have utterly no trust in her. And as such, and the value of the pound has now dipped lower than the dollar now this morning, which is insane.
That is crazy. That is crazy. So no trust in trust. And there's a good strap line for the marketing departments there. So what happened to the honeymoon, Christian? Because traditionally leaders get a bounce in the polls for a period of time when they start. And Truss she seems to be polling lower than Boris, the disgraced former British prime minister. This is totally unprecedented.
It's unprecedented, but I think it's because I think a lot of people really feel that the country is in a position that they don't want it to be in. They obviously are aiming particularly at the Conservative Party as in general anyway, and the fact that they don't feel that she represents them, because she's now effectively the third leader who's come in who's not been voted in. So I think there's definitely a rumbling from the general populace to have a general election. But ultimately that means you have, you know, the ambassador of popularity, that is Keir Starmer, potentially going to get voted in just because the Conservatives are doing so badly right now, financially, economically, in this conundrum that they found themselves in. And by decisions they've made, I don't think that Keir Starmer is the leader that people are now saying we need a strong pound and we need a strong business and a strong country. I don't think he's the right person to lead that. So there is a profound call from even people in general, just in conversation at work, who generally don't talk about politics. They're like, oh, we need to get these stories out. You know, the country's gone to pot. We need something different. And I'm going, yeah, but what does Keir represent? What does he do? Is he a different vision? Does he have a different position? No, he wants us back in the EU. So who knows what's going to happen here?
Is that his main? I mean, I don't know what his platform is. I mean, does anybody know? Does he want to take us back in the EU?
I believe so. I'm sure there was a mention that he wants to basically rejoin or reformat the EU. And I think there's also talk now, that I might be incorrect, there's some kind of new European pact that they want the UK to be part of, some kind of new trade deal.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yes. I've heard of, so this is sort of easing back into the EU step by step. So he's a member of the Trilateral Commission. A lot of people aren't aware of that. Keir Starmer is actually a higher ranking globalist than Liz Truss or practically anybody on the Tory side. But so that's interesting. That's interesting you say that, Christian.
Yeah, so we've also found there's obviously they've wiped $942 billion off the value of the pound from their treasury has just been wiped out over the course of the last week. So that isn't in terms of the cost of imports, exports has gone up wildly. The whole ratio from pounds to value for other currencies is just absolutely fluctuated. And I did see that they're thinking about downgrading the value of the pound again to only an A ranking from a AA that it currently is, and a AAA that it was 5 years ago.
Wow. We really haven't had this conversation about the British economy since, well, quite frankly, Christian, since George Soros raided the money markets and made a name for himself back in the 80s. And that sort of kicked off that sort of major economic slide into the early 90s. And everyone remembers what that was like. Sky high interest rates, housing crisis, all the rest of it, just general economic deprivation. And here we are having this conversation again. We know what the answers to the problems are, Christian. We've spoken about this many times on this program, and it's policies that are causing hyperinflation. It's energy policies that are bankrupting and allowing speculators to run rampant. It's sanctions, trying to embargo and sanction Russia on energy. We know what needs to happen to fix the hemorrhaging, but that's not happening. I don't hear anybody with any genuine policy pivots, Christian. All I'm seeing is these sort of creative Band-Aid type ideas, and where they don't want to address the elephant in the room, so they just want to go on decorating the room with new wallpaper. You know, that's what I see.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good analogy. It's just they try painting over the problem with this like new wallpaper, but effectively what stands behind it, the walls are exactly the same, and they want the structure to remain as it is while it all falls apart. I think Kwasi Kwarteng, I think his name is, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, he's the new Chancellor of the Exchequer. So he's obviously made some strange policy going to the Bank of England. He wants them to do print off more money for inflation. But he's also made another announcement that happened on the same day as the Queen's funeral. Actually, it was that afternoon, that he wanted to bring forward to the UK charter cities. I don't know if you've been reading about this. So the idea is now that a charter city, and he mentioned the cities that are going to be the case, Portsmouth, Southampton, Isle of Wight, New Forest, the whole southern sector of the south of England, is to become available for private industry to buy into and effectively to run as their own country while operating effectively as a tax-free zone, much like how the free ports do at some of the airports. They want that whole section there to be become a free trade, and how that will allow corporations effectively therefore to run those cities in the way that they would see fit. Now, I was looking what a charter city effectively is, and I learned that in California, of the 246 states and cities that there are in California, 108 of them are charter cities, and that effectively is what's caused lots of the friction over there, because not only are they trying to get legislation passed, you also have to get corporations therefore to be involved or on board, and they obviously don't want to move, they're very stalwart. So I think that problem is now certainly going to happen here with the south of England, and there's now other cities that have been earmarked to go up for private auction, effectively.
Wait a minute. What are you talking about? Like basically flogging whole towns and cities, basically, or villages, yes. Towns and cities.
Yes, that is what that was the announcement that was made while the Queen's funeral was on.
So I mean, I'm not shocked, by the way, Christian. That tells you the state of affairs. I'm not shocked, because if there's one thing the Tories do better than anybody, they can privatize anything. And so when you run out of state utilities and state assets, and you're like, let's just start privatizing cities. I mean, how about that? Let's sell off the country. I mean, is that what we're looking at? Is that what we're looking at?
It looks like that might be their way to raise cash or raise funds. So it makes you wonder how much money is left in the kitty now. I don't need to look at charter cities in movies, like say Judge Dredd or OCP and RoboCop, and you see what they look like and you go, that is what is going to be for the south of England.
Wow. Okay. Well, yeah, RoboCop. RoboCop's a good one, actually. I learned a lot from RoboCop. It's a good lesson in civics.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite films, Christian, because I learned a lot about the corporate state by actually watching RoboCop and Judge Dredd, too. I mean, it's a little more extreme, Judge Dredd, but RoboCop is excellent. So, would you agree that's one of the greatest civil and corporate municipal affairs studies of all time?
It is, yeah. And the fact that it's sort of played like a tongue-in-cheek, but it's so revealing, it kind of makes it obvious what will happen when this occurs. The idea of the OCP being an all-powerful corporation oligarchy who oversees everything, the whole building of the city, while also allowing, you know, criminal factors to happen, to allow corporation to happen, to allow capitalism to happen. We have to allow criminal elements to go on.
Yes, yes, I know. Well, I thought about that when you see the crime wave, especially in the U.S. What was interesting about that is that, you know, immediately in San Francisco and places like this, all of a sudden there's a shortage of private security. So, I mean, and now all of a sudden these firms are coming forward. They're a hiring frenzy on the privatized security side of things. And it's just like, that's just chapter and verse straight out of RoboCop, basically. Yeah. Problem, reaction, corporate solution, right?
For sure, yeah. I mean, the idea is you now have to have effectively private police forces, you know, who aren't responsive to the government. I guess they would still follow the law, potentially, but their first line of duty and payment is to corporations.
Yeah.
So I literally asked Steve.
They're huge. Those are like G4S in these countries. They're massive. And Serco is another big one. And of course, they're big in the UK, that firm, Serco.
Yeah, Serco is the big, so G4S, Securicore, massive infrastructure. And when they deal with things like everything from foster homes to policing to the moving of money, they are into everything, running prisons.
Yeah, Serco, a lot of people aren't aware, Serco's also got the contract for the British nuclear deterrent, certain amount of the management or staffing or protection or whatever, running of some of the nuclear weapons facilities has been outsourced to Serco. So they talk about national security and all this stuff. A lot of people aren't aware of that. So that's, I think in terms of like big parts of the British Navy as well, they've outsourced some of the support. There's big technical support ops, you know, big boats and massive equipment that basically supports or services the British Navy. That's all Serco. So that used to be all in-house.
Oh, right.
Yeah, it's all Serco now. So, I mean, they're everywhere. They're into military, they're into police, they're into prisons, they're into the courts. The bailiffs and security at some of the major crown courts, it's Serco. In fact, the guys that duffed up Julian Assange at Woolwich Crown Court took all his papers. I think there were reports suggested that I read at the time that those were Serco employees. So corporates, basically, but working for the courts. I mean, it's just incredible. The tentacles are just endless.
Yeah, it makes like looking at, if you were to say, look at those two gentlemen who obviously assaulted and took away his it's paperwork. I mean, how do you process them? Do you basically just buy them from the job from Serco? Do you stop them working in the court system? Or do you just move them around? You know, they're just employees doing as they're told. It's that you can't prosecute them potentially because they've worked for a company and doing what they were encouraged to do.
Yeah, I don't see the government taking Serco to court. Yeah, that's a good question. The answer, Christian, of course, is totally unaccountable. Totally unaccountable. But we got a minute left. Anything else you want to put on the table there?
No, that was really the thing. I mean, the sterling being about to tank out, I think there's certainly a move now towards. I saw like this week that Amazon about to launch its own version of Bitcoin. I saw the Barclays want to do the same now, is to all get on that bandwagon of the blockchain. And I think there's going to be a real push towards that, this technocracy system, the idea of you're going to be losing cash. So everything going, everyone has to trade in some kind of digital currency, but no currency seems to be able to be standardized. They're all a bit messy. There's no singular platform. You can't go into a shop yet and still use Bitcoin as a transaction, for instance, or you can't use Ethereum, you know, at WHM. I think until that becomes standardized, I don't think any of that's going to take off in terms of the public use. So yeah, it's in a right mess right now. I don't think that Liz Truss and her government has any idea what they're doing.
You said Liz Truss. I think that was a Freudian. Could that be a Freudian slip? No, it's not actually. It's there's no trust. There's no trust in trust. But thank you, Christian, a research assistant, and joins us here on this segment on Tuesday. Much appreciated, Christian.
Thank you, buddy. Have a good day.
There he goes, ladies and gentlemen.